laws and how they work together, you're going to screw up.
Okay.
And that's what it is. It's really a small subset of the training course that I give.
Good, good.
But in the materials now, just to now specifically discuss short form contracts, you won't find the term short form anywhere in the law. It's a nickname. It was developed long before I came here. What it refers to, basically, is an authorization that is granted by the county executive pursuant to Section 161.11.1c. 161 is, as you may know, if you're part of the legislation committee, which is reviewing right now, is the section that deals with the Board of Aging. So what we're talking about now are contracts that would come under the jurisdiction of the Board of A&C, nothing else. Not purchase contracts. Purchase contracts when you're buying materials, supplies, equipment, they go to the purchasing agent. You do not do a short-form contract for purchasing. Okay. So we're only talking about things that come under the jurisdiction of A&C. Now, going back to my presentation, the county executive issues such what they call a certificate of authorization. It has to be approved by the Board of Acquisition and Contract. Once A&C approves it, it's given to the head of a department, board, or commission. And then once they get that, they do not need the further approval of the Board of A&C. Another point is the word short has nothing to do with the length of the contract. My short-form contracts are as long as my long-form contracts. It has to do with the procedure. And again, it goes to that nickname. The reason they called it short-form was you didn't have to go through the process of A&C, and that's all it means. The current resolution that was issued by the county that was issued by the Board of A&C authorizing the county executive to make the designation was adopted on January 28th, 2010. That resolution was subsequently amended on March 4th, 2010 to add the Department of Budget and the Department of Correction. As you may recall, the board objected when the original resolution was submitted because those two commissioners hadn't been approved, so they were deleted. And after their approval, they were later added. And so no contracts were basically signed for those departments except by the county executive up until that date. That's the important thing to remember here. When you look at the A&C section, only the county executive can sign contracts. And so without these delegations, there are two delegations. One under 161.11.1b, which is for contracts that are authorized by A&C. And this other one under 161.11.1c, which allows you not to go back to A&C. In addition to, there are certain things you have to know. There are rules in all of the delegations. The general rules, you'll see on page one, can't be a contract for purchase or sale of real property. The contract has to be submitted and approved by the county attorney's office. Contract shall not exceed the sum of $20,000. No contract shall be for the purchase, sale, rental, supplies, materials, equipment. That goes again to making sure you're not doing a purchase contract. And the contract term shall not exceed 1 year.
Yeah, I want to, before we move on that, I want to go through them, but I want you to focus on when we get back to questions you want to do that now, or why don't you go and finish the part of the presentation. Item C, mm-hmm. as well as item E. In other words, the 1 year term.
That's why I really need to get to
get through the points and then, then we'll come back to those.
There are several, because the law doesn't have that in it. It's whatever the county executive chooses. Now,
what do you mean?
And ANC approves under the resolution.
When you say the law doesn't have that in it, what is that?
It has no limitations whatsoever. It just says subject to whatever limitations are put on the delegation.
So when you mention here that the contract value shall not exceed $20,000,
that's in the resolution approved by the Board of A&C and in the delegation that comes from the county executive.
But that resolution has the force and effect of law.
Once it's adopted, that's correct.
Right. Okay.
That is absolutely correct.
All right. Okay, proceed.
There are several special short-form authorizations. The Commissioner of Parks, Recreation, and Conservation gets one to execute license agreements that exceed that general short-form dollar authorization for the county center. I need to make an important point here. Short-forms are not just for procurements. This is an example of a revenue license agreement. You're not buying anything. You're licensing the space at the county center to make money for us. So short forms are not always subject to the procurement policy. It's only procurements that are subject to the procurement policy.
Okay.
Commissioner of Social Services can exceed the general short-form dollar limitation when he's doing agreements with certified foster parents, provided they're at the rates established by the New York State Department of Social Services. Commissioner of Finance is authorized to execute contracts relating to the issuance and sale of bonds, notes, or other indebtedness of the county, which exceed the general short-form dollar and term limitations. And then there are certain provisos that the indebtedness has to have been authorized by the Board of Legislators and be in an amount equal to or less than the maximum amount authorized by the Board of Legislators. The authorization of the Board of Legislators shall have delegated to the Commissioner of Finance the power to prescribe terms and form of the indebtedness, and such contract has to meet all the other applicable limitations of short-form contracts. So we always have to look at the bond acts to see what the authorizations are. But in general, we put language in there to make sure she has all these necessary authorizations from the board. Finally, the biggest one that exceeds the dollar limitations goes back to the time of when freedom was granted to WCC to be more independent. Here, the president of Westchester Community College is authorized to execute certain contracts, provided that he meets certain limitations. The contract has to be approved by the Board of Trustees of the Community College, can't be for voice or data networks, contracts from, you'll see, a lot of that has to do with when we were developing our data network here and we wanted them on it. You go down, the important part is D and E. They can go up to $100,000, and the term of the contract shall not exceed 5 years.
Okay.
All right. It should be noted that in the resolution and also in the certificate of authorization, there is a proviso. The county, and this is to quote, the county executive, notwithstanding the authority delegated to the heads of departments, boards, and commissions pursuant to this resolution, shall retain his authority to execute any and all contracts on behalf of the county. So he always retains that.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's not a permanent delegation. Any delegation of authority can be withdrawn.
If he decides to sign a particular contract,
but this is,
he can make that, it overrides the delegation.
That is general procedures in terms of delegation of authority.
Right.
Right, okay.
Proceed. Okay, now you want to go back to a question.
Okay, are you through with the...
That's the sum of stuff. There's more to come, but you had a question on CMJ.
Okay, yes, I have some specific questions because we did, this committee did get correspondence with respect to investigating the potential violations of the county procurement policies regarding short-form contracts.
Well, I actually addressed those later in my presentation, if you want me to. If you want me to continue, I addressed those specific questions. I read it when I went up on the website Friday night.
What questions did you read?
It appears there are several short-form contracts with the same company for the same purpose. This practice is a violation of county procurement policy. That was the referral you got from Chairman Jenkins.
Okay. Right. Were there questions relating to that?
Well, I assume that's what the committee was investigating.
Oh, no, you said questions, so I was trying to figure out
part of my presentation deals with that.
With questions, okay.
With that issue.
Okay, all right.
I don't know, would you want me to continue the presentation and then start the question?
Go right ahead.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Where are you on the presentation sheet?
I'm on page 3, why are short-form contracts subject to procurement policy?
Okay.
Okay, as I noted before, not all short-form contracts are procurement.
Okay.
Some are for licensing, leasing, provide services. In those cases where the county isn't procuring anything, well, then the procurement policy doesn't apply. It only applies to procurements. Now.
So let's get that clear. You're saying that where the county is not procuring anything.
That's correct.
The short-form, the contract, the rules of short-form contract does not apply.
No, I'm saying now, the procurement policy does not apply.
Okay.
So I was trying to make that distinction up front in the very beginning.
Yeah, I know.
Short-form contracts is just a subset of authorizations for contracts. It has nothing to do with the rules of procurement.
Okay.
And that's why I distinguish that in my presentation.
Okay, thank you. Could you make sure that you explain what procurement means when you say that when the county... It only applies when the county actually engages in procurement. Explain what that means from a legal standpoint under the New York State, I guess, general municipal law.
I have a longer course on that. When you're talking about procurement, you're always starting with the general municipal law.
Right.
And that's the basis for everything. The first thing you look at in the general municipal law is public bidding, section 103. You have to make a determination initially whether or not a contract comes under section 103.
Which is public works type contracts mainly?
No, it's public works and purchasing.
And purchasing, okay.
Right.
But we're just talking now about the purchasing aspects of 103.
No.
Are you wanting to? Okay, talk about both then.
No. In fact, I said that earlier today.
Okay.
The Purchasing Act is for purchasing. Short form contracts do not involve purchasing. That is illegal. So if you're buying supplies, material.
Okay.
Maybe I had to define terms, okay?
No, but proceed. Just proceed.
Purchasing, so like, purchasing.
I understand. Yes. Just let him.
So I understand. So excluding something, a tangible good then.
That's great. Supplies, materials, equipment, and the services related thereto.
In other words.
Are what we call purchasing contracts.
All right.
That's
so
defined under state law.
Let's just take this one step at a time so that the members here. When you say purchasing, are you referring to goods?
Yes.
Tangible goods?
Correct.
Are you referring to services? No.
Only if it's, and this is where it gets very complicated.
You say, yeah.
It gets very complicated.
Okay.
Because a purchasing contract that's subject to the Purchasing Act and the public bidding limits
yes.
for purchasing contracts may involve services, and this is under case law and mainly opinions of the state comptroller. If the bulk of the contract involves the purchase of the equipment, supplies, and materials.
Right. And, okay. And services related to.
The services
the
are related to.
I'm not talking. We're not talking about services related. Which you would say services that are incidental to the acquisition of a tangible good. Okay. We're not talking about those.
Right.
In other words, if you buy a computer, you've got to use a service to hook it up. That's clearly, we're not talking about those. Services independently of the purchase of a good, of a tangible asset. Is that part of purchasing?
It should not be.
Okay. Intangibles.
But then you have to define services.
Well, we're doing this in an iterative way.
Because we started with public bidding.
So professional services, okay, let's stay with services.
An incredibly important point.
Yeah.
Because with public bidding, there are case law exceptions. Non-professional services are subject to public bidding.
What is non-professional services versus professional services?
Again, it goes to case right. law and opinions of the
right,
controller.
Exactly. So in other words,
right.
we're in this murky area when you come to services. Let's agree to that.
I have a follow-up question to make sure you understand where the...
But we got to get back to the point.
You write in your memo that the typical short-form contract is either a public works contract that falls below the general bidding threshold. Let's say you were paving a parking lot. What does the asphalt fall under? Is that a good to be purchased, or is that considered part of
again,
public works contract?
That goes to case law and opinions of the controller. What the controller has generally said is you look at the primary nature of the contract. If you're hiring a contractor to pave a parking lot, then the materials necessary to pave the parking lot are incidental to the main purpose of the contract, which is to hire someone else to pave your parking lot. So that would come under a public works contract. And the public, and this analysis is very important because it goes to the bidding limits.
Right.
Because the bidding limit is lower for a purchasing contract and it's higher for a public works contract.
I don't want to get. We're going to have several, and I don't want to spend this entire session on going over all of the aspects of what the general municipal law is or what procurement is. We will have time. We're going to have more than one session with your department on this.
Okay.
Specifically, now I want to ask a few questions relating to. And I read your memo.
Okay.
You know, and I just want to, so that we can move on. I want to be able to really ask a few questions relating to the inquiries that were brought to the committee. I want you to, you have a copy of this listing of contracts? I think it totals like $5 million.
Yeah, these are the 2010 contracts listed in alphabetical order by your
staff. By vendor, I think.
Right, $5.5 million, $5,539,954. Do you see that?
Trying to pull apart.
Does anyone have that? Everyone have that?
Yeah, everybody has it. Right off.
You need it, Jim?
I need it.
Yeah. Let me ask you this question first. Mm-hmm. With respect to the limits, the purpose of the limits are intended, and you can tell me if I'm wrong or right, mm-hmm. are intended that once you hit the procurement limit, if you have one contract, if you go over that limit, there's another procurement process that you are supposed to engage in, and that if you're over $20,000, what are you supposed to do? Just the limits.
It depends.
Well, let me put it easy. I'm buying, let's assume it's a service that has to go out for public bidding.
Okay.
Okay, I'll go over $20,000, what do I have to do?
Then the question you run into was, you have to go back, and the analysis I would do with a client at that point, or one of my attorneys would do with a client at that point, is to determine, is this a surprise? You know, when they estimate, because they're supposed to estimate a job before they go out.
So in other words, I just want to narrow this down so that we're quick. Okay, in terms of whether that...
My advice is going to be based on what I find.
Right, but take it from me that the limit is not disputed. I'm over 20. You agree it's over 20. What do I do? Yeah. What is the process?
My advice would be based on what I find in my investigation.
And what would you?
I might say no. You can't do anything.
In other words, if I want to purchase a table that's over $20,000,
that's okay. The purchasing act. I'm sorry.
Okay. If I want to go and pave a road, right, in White Plains,
right.
That is over $20,000.
Okay. The thing I'm going to do is I'm going to demand that you show me what the initial estimate was by your engineers.
It was $19,999.
I'm going to look at the basis of that.
Okay.
And then I'm going to ask, why has the price gone up? And
okay.
If you can show me a legitimate reason that it went over, then I'll say, okay, you can go, what you'll now have to do procedurally is go to the Board of A&C.
Okay. So, in other words,
amend the contract.
Let's get this. So, if I'm at $19,999, right? I came to you. You said this is below the $20,000. That's
right.
Fine. Okay. I came back. The contract is done,
mm-hmm.
right? It's $20,000. That says $40,000. Okay. Then.
Then I'm gonna have more questions.
I figured the other one was very easy. So a little complicated.
Yeah, but it's a small amount.
Yeah, right. But the point I'm getting to is this. I'm getting to is that the limits, the purpose of the limits that are set, and I happen to have read some of this, the purpose of the limits that are set by either the general municipal law, because the concepts are the same for our law as well as others. The purpose of these limits are for what purpose? Why do we have limits, dollar limits set on contracts? What is the general purpose as a procurement lawyer in the county? Legislative purpose, state okay. as well as county.
It's not a presentation.
Okay. First of all, the limits differ. If you look at state law, right now the limit on public works is $35,000. In your local law, and this again goes back to the legislation committee, when we were amending 161, we pointed that out to the legislation committee. And
that is different.
Decided
I admit it, yeah.
We have a lower limit
understood.
For public works bidding.
Understood.
And the legislature also changes, by the way, the purchasing limits. It's now up to $20,000.
Okay.
Chapter 836 of the laws of Westchester County still requires public bidding and notice in the... we have all sorts of bidding.
Okay.
It's the official public bidding rules kick in at $10,000, which was the old state limit.
Understood that the limits are different. All of that is understood. Mm-hmm. My question is, what are the purposes of... what is the public policy behind setting up limits? Setting limits. Why do they set limits?
It's a decision made by the state legislature as to when the rules should kick in. Because the rules involve cost. When you do a public bid, it costs a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of staff time involved. You have to pay for advertisements. It's a lot of delays. It's not like you're a private business. You just go on the phone and get yourself three or four quotes orally. You have a very strict, rigorous procedure you've got to follow. So the legislature, from time to time, and during my career for public works, it's gone from $5,000 to $7,000 to $20,000, where it sat for many, many years, and it just went up to $35,000. So the legislature makes a decision as to when...
So you don't know...
when you are going to have to follow these very strict rules.
You don't know what the general public policy is behind it. That's what you're saying.
I can tell you what the public policy is besides public bidding, but not the limits.
That's fair. Just say no. You don't know.
Are a legislative determination. Just like the state determined, I want those rules to kick in at 35,000. This honorable board decided,
yes,
we want them to kick in at 20,000.
I know
so
that.
I would turn the question around to you and say, what was your reasoning for doing that?
Well, you can ask me that, but I don't know. That's your answer. I mean, just say that I don't know. I mean, I'm just trying to get from you
when you hit the limit, rule.
Right. Okay.
Apply.
But you don't know the rationale behind why those.
That's
legislative
fair. Determination.
That's fair.
Totally policy.
That's fair. Okay. Okay.
But I assume there's a rational decision.
Oh, yeah.
Because you realize that you incur a lot of costs the second those rules kick in.
Right. And I'm not going to debate what the rationale is because it's in the record of the state legislature. And it's in the record, I think, of our legislation. If you look back at our... where we adopt the general municipal law, the rationale I would submit are the same types of rationale that they would have. Maybe different amounts.
It's not stated as far as I know.
Well, you said you didn't know, so obviously you couldn't respond to the question earlier, right?
The rationale is not actually stated in there.
Yeah.
So if you're asked, because if it had been stated, then I could say, yes, I know. It's in paragraph one.
But you don't know what the state rationale is either.
They don't explain themselves either.
Okay. But let me ask you then now, specifically with respect to the issues that were asked to look into. And we're not going to finish this whole thing today because I think it's a lot, very long document here, and I'm not going to. I know other members might have questions on it, and I don't want to spend most of the time going through this myself. But having not known what the limits are, let's start with just looking down the list here. If you get a chance,
point to something. I'm just looking. So tell me where you're concerned.
Well, where you have contracts that are, let me just see which one. I don't want to pick on anyone's particular contract, but you have several here that are, you have BER, Ben Ranger Laz Development Company.
Can you give me a page number?
And it's on page number 2 of 15. It is
and you have for 212 Babbitt Road. Yeah, that caught my attention.
Right. You know, you see that all. You see that.
And you'll see a lot of those for planning. They have to do with certain grant programs they have. And believe me, I caught that about 10 years ago. When I started doing the reports on this, and I would see numerous, and I had to sit down with Norma on this a long, long time ago. Basically, what happens is the grant program comes through, and the grant's to the individual. And when you've got a multifamily building, the only way to get the grant money to fix up the building, say you want to fix the roof, and here it looks like you had two separate grants because you'll have a unit with two contracts, and some. My guess is, and this is what normally would happen in these planning things, is she was rehabbing 212 Babbitt Road.
Are grants programs subject to the procurement policy?
The procurement policy has exemptions. There's an exemption. It's 3A11. Yeah, 3A11. Does everyone, you all got a copy of the procurement policy? So it's subject to it, but it has an exemption for that.
Okay, what is the exemption? In other words, you're saying this project could be exempt?
Yeah, any procurement made pursuant to procurement procedures provided for under federal or state, other federal or state applicable laws, or actually it's 12 here. Procurements that involve expenditure of federal or state assistance where to the extent that federal or state law rules or regulations conflict with the provisions of this policy.
There you go. Yeah.
So I've got the regulations of the grant and we have to follow them,
right.
Otherwise we don't get the money.
Right, to the exactly.
When you
exactly.
See all these planning ones that have an address, it's one of those.
But that's exactly my question.
Yeah.
As the procurement officer, do you know whether these?
No, I'm not the procurement officer.
Okay. Okay.
That's in my presentation. Each procurement officer is labeled in legislation. In fact, you've just adopted it recently.
All right. Okay. You're not. I take that for.
I'm just the lawyer.
Okay. You are the legal advice. You are the procurement lawyer for the county.
That's correct.
Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay.
I'm in charge of contracts and real estate.
All right. Do you know, or could you tell me as you sit here, whether all of these amounts that appear at 212 Bobbitt Road are in compliance with the federal procurement policies?
I'd have to sit down with Norma and look at each one of the grants.
As you mentioned earlier, that you've been looking at this for a number of years.
I've looked at this as a general issue, and had the, because when I saw a lot of them would, you know, under state law would be public works contracts, I questioned in the very beginning when they started doing this program whether or not we're violating state law. So they had to sit down and walk me through the grant programs before I would even allow them to do these.
So as we
held up a number of contracts several years ago for quite a long time.
Understood. So as you sit here, what you're saying is that you don't know whether they are, and that's something that we need to.
I know generally, I just don't know which grant program.
But you don't know whether these, the ones that I just identified, whether or not those are in compliance with the federal procurement policy.
I would have to ask.
You don't know that right now.
Well,
you can't answer that yes or no.
Federal procurement policy. It would be their regulations for the program.
Okay, right.
I would have to.
You don't know that right now. Okay, all right. Because those are the kinds of things I think it's important that we get kind of cleared up if we're going to look into these issues, because we've gone through situations in this county where federal policy has not been followed strictly, and where we are continuing to pay the price for it. And it's been very, very expensive to the county. So it's important that we be vigilant when we're using federal funds to ensure that.
And we have given that advice to all of our clients.
Right. But you don't, as you sit here as the head of the legal procurement department, you really don't know whether this particular one, which has been brought to our attention.
That's an important thing that's in my presentation here. When we go through, we look at whether or not you check the I's and dotted the T's. I don't see, these come in drips and drips.
Right,
so
exactly.
There's no way I would.
That you would know, right.
In fact, having to prepare the report, which I've been doing for your honorable board since 1998, that's the only time I start to see patterns.
Yes.
And that's when I'll call the department.
Yeah.
You know, when the individual attorney gets them, they're handed out one at a time. So what you do is you look to see, did they comply with all the rules?
Yeah.
And that's what we do.
All right. Let me ask you this so we can move off of this. Could you get back so that our by our next meeting, you get back to us with a response in writing? On this particular continuous, where we see the continuous amounts falling below $20,000.
You mean just the plan?
Well, I mean, this is one that we just identified that we couldn't get an answer to, so I'm trying to get you to come back to us.
Clear. It's the planning contracts.
I don't know which it is. I'm looking at what I'm.
Well,
you're telling me it's planning. I'm not.
It says so in the code. It's department name. PLN.
Oh, that's what that means? Okay.
Yeah, you have a.
All right, I see PLN.
In the back of your
presentation, I see it.
You have a code.
All right. Okay, so for planning, yeah. Okay?
Sure. No problem.
All right. Okay. You want to go to another one? Let's look at, why don't we look at number DOH. What's DOH?
Department of Health. Can you give me a page number?
That's Department of Health?
Mm-hmm.
I'm still on two.
Okay.
All right. This approved sewage and waste hauling contract. These are hauling contracts where you...
Pickup and disposal of regulated medical waste.
Yes. I mean, generally...
Well, one's with DOH and one's with Department of Labor.
Right. But this is a question I have. Generally, for pickup of medical, like, any kind of... Isn't there some rules on hauling contracts with the county? Some rules that require that goes out for bidding or... What do we do generally when we have to contract to have, let's say, sewage or waste hauling?
It depends on the contract and who's issuing it, because we do different contracts.
We do different.
For example, the Parks Department has contracts for waste hauling within the parks.
Mm-hmm.
Public Works has certain waste hauling contracts for all of our buildings. Medical waste disposal is a very specialized field because it's highly regulated.
Oh. Okay, all right. Okay. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, medical waste is very highly regulated. The only two departments that really have it are health and labs and research.
Yeah.
So that's why it's not, you have to distinguish because of regulatory purposes, hauling of ordinary solid waste versus medical waste or hazardous waste. For example, our garage, the county garage obviously produces a lot of hazardous waste, so we need a separate contract for hauling that. You can't put that in standard trash. So the contracts we have for hauling garbage are very different. You know, ordinary garbage are very different from specialized regulated waste.
So why wouldn't these departments that have hauling, why couldn't they, you're saying to me that they could not combine and go out for bid and get the price that are...
No, I'm not saying that, but looking at the limits here, I don't see any violation.
Well, you're looking at two, but you want us to go through all the others?
Are there other medical waste contracts?
I think there might be. The ones that we I'm identifying are the ones that I think we have seen multiple times. I mean, I can go through the whole list, but if you want to do that.
Yeah, I mean, we had a bigger contract when we had the hospital, but we haven't had them since 1998. That's when we used to.
Yeah, but the question is really whether or not these contracts, I mean, whether they're $15,000 or not, whether they can be sent out, the department. This is an efficiency committee.
Oh, yeah.
So we're saying whether or not, instead of each department going out, whether they can combine and go out and get a lower price. That's what we're talking about. Yeah,
a possibility. But are you asking me, these two I'm looking at violate the law? I'm not looking at them.
That's not what I'm asking. I'm asking whether they could. I asked whether they could be combined and sent out in order for us to achieve efficiencies.
If they could, it's a policy decision.
Okay.
You know, but the problem you're running into is the way the law is set up.
Is there?
Each department has its own procuring and its own budget. Someone would have to be placed in charge of doing the overall procurement. So among those departments, they'd have to enter an interdepartmental agreement. For a contract totaling, it's $5,000 and $10,000, I don't know if they'd be willing to sit down and negotiate an interdepartmental agreement just to do one contract.
Do you know for a fact whether these contracts for 5 and 10 are always that low?
I can only look at the data in front of me.
Right, so you don't know that.
And
neither do I, but I assume that it,
right. Those two departments.
But that's why we are looking at this, where you have multiple contracts to see.
If I was looking at it and trying to guess whether it was right, given the amount of waste we produce, regulated medical waste, I would say that looks right.
Okay.
Because we don't produce, since we got rid of the hospital, we don't produce a lot of it anymore.
Okay, labs and researchers, huh?
10,000 looks about right for them. They, you know.
Right.
Because remember, they have medical waste and hazardous waste. Hazardous waste is a separate regulated field, and you need a hazardous waste hauler for that.
Okay.
Medical waste is different.
All right. Why don't we look?
Chemicals that would be considered hazardous waste.
Right. Let me look down, and some of this is not, it's not a matter, there are two things, I want to make sure you, when you answer these, respond to us, this is not all about whether the contract was violated. That's not,
this is an efficiency. Chairman's referral to you.
Right, but that's part of,
like legal violation.
That's part of what we're looking into, but importantly to understand, this is an efficiency committee. So we are trying to look at also whether or not we can combine things and whether we need legislation that would do that in order to achieve the kind of efficiencies by joint, instead of each department going out for their own procurement, that maybe if you bulk it together, if it's over 20 and they go out and bid, we can get it for less.
Well,
those are the kinds of things we're looking at also.
You know, that's partially legal and partially policy, and I can explain that by showing the procurement policy.
We're not going to get it. When the time comes, you'll opine on whether it is, whether it's permissible.
I can't opine because, to a large extent, the board, for example, because I've been asked this before by your own board, Going back to 75, you made a determination, because we run into this problem with the not-for-profits. The biggest cost you have with the not-for-profits is their overhead. When you do a lot of business with multiple not-for-profits, you're paying for all that extra overhead, because we have reporting requirements and other things that we require them to do. Back in 75, this Board of Legislators adopted a resolution where it said, okay, instead of giving money for contracts to 100 different arts and cultural organizations in Westchester, we're going to be more efficient and do it through the Arts Council. This way, internally, right, we're only monitoring one contract, and we're only paying for one set of overhead.
Okay.
But on the other hand, if you look at the rest of the contracts that you do, you still maintain a lot of $20,000, right, $15,000. And so, if you wanted to adopt a policy that was consistent with the purposes, and I can read you Section 104B.
Well, I don't want to read Section 104B. I'd like to get back to the question.
Well, that's the law that applies to
you. But I'd like to get back to
how you should guide your policies.
I'd like to get back to the question on here, question on page 2.
Okay.
Advanced business services. Because I'm trying to keep it to the questions we have before us, because we can go on and on with this.
Advanced business services?
Advanced.
Avant.
Avant.
Messenger services.
Messenger, yeah, it's a business service. There's a $20,000 and then there's a $15,000 amount here on the same day, or same period of time.
Yes, this is the district attorney's office. I remember this one.
Yeah. And just to drop down a little more to the ones that I... Other ones, look, if you go down further down, you've got Boyd Entertainment Systems. Mm-hmm. And that's
right, but on Avant, the thing that's missing in information, the top one is the North Run. They broke the county up into two zones, which you'll see actually in a lot of our bids, we break the county into zones because it's more efficient. So in this case, the DA decided to break the messenger services into a north part of the county and a south part of the county. Would it have been more efficient? Again, that's a judgment call. Looking at this alone, I don't know that I'm going to criticize the DA for making that policy choice.
I'm not asking for any criticisms.
Well, you pointed that contract out.
I'm pointing it out to say that these are the contracts that are over $20,000. And asking whether...
But
are there any... Let me
for separate purposes. Yeah, they're not...
Are there any prohibitions about going out to, let's say, bid for this kind of thing, this kind of service?
Well, that's... If you saw my presentation, the procurement policy itself is loose.
Okay.
Your Honorable Board adopted a very loose policy intentionally. And I've explained that in John Nona's committee in public session.
Okay.
The thing I'd be worried about is if it were, I don't know that this is a public work. I would have to do some research on this. But if it was considered a public works contract, I'd be concerned you might be violating the public bidding laws if you intentionally split it to avoid public bidding. And I want to be real clear, I am not accusing the district attorney of...
Well, I don't know why you would even mention something like
because
that, because that's kind of gratuitous on your part.
Because that's all I do when I analyze these. You're asking me public policy decisions about what would be more efficient. The only thing I analyze, and the only thing I'm permitted to analyze, and I want to make this very clear, Mr. Chairman, is whether or not something's legal. That's the only thing you can ask me about. If you're asking about what's efficient and what's not efficient, that's a policy decision your Honorable Board has to make.
Okay, so as you sit here, I ask you not what's efficient. I ask you whether there were any legal prohibitions against... In terms of what is efficient, we will ultimately... recommendations are made after a committee evaluates.
But that wasn't a gratuitous comment. I was answering your question, sir.
Okay. Let's go down to Boyd Entertainment Systems.
Yes, sir. Okay, that's the Department of Parks, Recreation, and Conservation. The only potential legal issue with that, if it was for the same thing that they were doing, and it wasn't really for two different purposes, then The only potential issue under, because this is a professional service, so it's not subject to public bidding. The only potential issue would be that under Section 5, A and B of the procurement policy, you have different rules. Mm-hmm. If it's under $20,000, the total contract value, you can get oral quotes under Section 5A. It says oral or written. The second you go over $20,000, you're obliged to get written quotes. So if this were for the same purposes, I would ask the procuring officer, did you get written quotes? Because the only violation here is a technical violation. If you got oral quotes, then you've got a potential violation.
All right. Could you flip to page one, the third item, A&C Furia Electrical Motors.
A&C.
That's with DPW.
Okay. So they had emergency repair at a pump station on the Bronx River Parkway. And
where do you see that?
That's the last one. I'm sorry. The middle one. No, the last one. Yeah, the last one. And before that, supply and install a new water pump. And before that, tie-in domestic water pumps. The terms are all different. So they're not for the same thing.
In other words, A&C repair, you're saying that the 20,000, the tie-in domestic water pumps are different from the supply and installation of the water pump?
It appears to be.
In other words,
because one is BRP, that's the Bronx River Parkway. Oh, I'm sorry. Tie-in and supply. I don't know. I would have to find that out. I would have to ask Commissioner Shue on that one. You're looking at the first two of the four.
Yeah, the first two.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I went up from the bottom.
Yeah.
I would definitely have to ask Commissioner Shue if that's related or not. But the other two are clearly different locations and clearly different work.
Okay. Those are the kind, and we have several
different dates, you'll know.
Yeah.
One's in July, one's in April.
We have several of these that what I think I'm going to do is I'm going to isolate
okay.
the ones that I think that are relevant,
mm-hmm.
and I will send you a written inquiry
okay.
or a written response on these rather than us doing this way. I'm also going to ask that you, on the planning, on the issue concerning the federal
Grants
that you respond to us, because since we are now aware of this, I think that we need to really, from our perspective, get a clear response of whether or not it was done properly
mm-hmm.
under the federal rules. Let me ask any other members for questions. Any other questions? Anyone else? Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Yes,
I'm trying to get a sense of what the rules of the road are in terms of legality. I've been thumbing through as well, and I noticed that there are four for American Aquatic Testing for sampling and analysis.
Mm-hmm.
Now, each one of them is for a different locality within the county. On the face, it looks
well,
as
no,
if
they're
that's...
different sewage treatment plants.
You know, it looks as if there's a reason for that. The way,
they would definitely be professional
yeah.
services.
Yeah. One, I have very limited experience with government contracts, but I do have enough experience with government contracts to know that you can divide contracts up to, quote unquote, comply with or evade legal requirements. A creative attorney can make these things pretty fungible.
Right,
my question is, where's the contract? This
goes back to what I was discussing before. This comes under the procurement policy.
Yeah.
When you look at the total of it, they're $8,800
mm-hmm.
each.
Right.
They would go over $20,000. So under the procurement policy, I would ask them, did you get written quotes or did you get oral quotes?
Okay.
If they got them in writing, no harm, no foul. Because it's only a procedural distinction in law as to what procedure you have to follow to get the quotes.
Mm-hmm.
When we review these, we look to see that they got the quotes or whether or not it fell, as you see in our presentation, whether or not it mm-hmm. fell under an exemption of the procurement policy.
Mm-hmm.
I
just want to make sure I understand what the difference is between compliance
and
evasion.
Yeah. compliant, well, and that, if you saw in the presentation I handed out, the concern I have is because the procurement policy, it's really, you're running into technical issues. It's how did you procure? That's the only issue that comes up if you go over the limits in the procurement policy when you get a public comment. The thing I'm more concerned about are contracts that involve public works, because there's case law. Part of the problem is you'll never see any of this in the statute. It's case law that's developed over the years and opinions of the controller. And the controller opinions are important because they're the ones who audit our contracts and say we did right and we did wrong. So we look at those, although they're not binding court precedent. And one of the themes that comes out, and it applies not only to public works contracts, but to purchasing contracts in those cases and opinions, is you should not intentionally split up contracts to avoid public bidding. So if there was a legal concern I would have is that to make sure that when you're doing short-form contracts, that there's no intent to avoid the public bidding laws for public works contracts, because the public works contracts are the only ones that can be done in short forms. As I said at the outset, purchasing always has to be done by the purchasing agent. And they have rules that go down to $150. They have various procedures that you have to follow.
Right. Now, in terms of a personal services contract, just, you know, whether it's a translator or a therapist or something like that, does the same legal standard still hold that there has to be, depending on how you look at it, a lack of intent to evade the requirements by arbitrarily splitting stuff?
You don't have a bidding limit in the procurement policy. What you have are procedural issues about how you procure. It isn't up till $75,000 that it becomes serious under the procurement policy, because that's when you have to do either an RFP or an RFQ.
Okay.
That's when, if I saw, I've never seen it, you know, where you've had that many contracts.
Where one consultant
right,
or whatever has.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
It's rare that you would ever see anything where you have that many number of short forms with the same individual or the same thing that might violate the $75,000. I mean, I took a quick look at this. I hadn't seen it. It jumped out at me like that. That's where you have to be concerned.
But if there were,
because that's when I tell the client you have to do an RFP.
Okay.
Or an RFP. You're allowed to pull from various laws. You go to Section 6 generally, although Section 7 may apply. The other thing to be aware of, which is in my presentation, is the procurement policy does not apply to architects, engineers, and land surveyors. Your Honorable Board, in three separate acts, starting in 1976 and ending in 1996, created special rules for pre-qualification and selection of architects, engineers, and land surveyors. That's a totally different procedure. So, and that kicks in at $20,000. So you could do, conceivably, an architect or an engineer or a land surveyor up to $20,000. But then I get concerned if I see multiple contracts with an architect, an engineer, or a land surveyor, I'd be worried that, not that you're violating state law on public bidding, but that you're violating this Honorable Board's rules on pre-qualification selection.
That answer your questions, legislator? We can follow up if you'd like. What I will do also is, because some of this is going to have to be in writing, I'll take other questions and
stuff. I think that doing a lot of this in writing makes imminent sense.
Right.
So many.
Yeah,
I can just imagine what the flow chart
would be. Because this is incredibly complex. My gross oversimplification that I give to departmental contracts managers is 99 pages long.
Yeah.
That's why I gave you a copy of it, just to show it. And short forms only takes up 2 pages.
Yeah.
It's, you have to understand the context of all these laws.
Yeah. Yeah, I know, and it's a lot to read in very quickly. Legislator.
Thank you. I don't really have any questions, but I do have some comments that I would like to share with this board, if that is okay with you, Mr. Chairman. May I speak freely? I'm delighted that we are discussing short-form contracts, and I see it as a memo that was submitted by Chairman Jenkins. I, too, have pending resolutions in that my personal opinion, I think that we should be looking closer at and paying a little more attention to. And a lot of what was discussed here, and by the way, did an excellent job, and this is not the first time you've spoken before, the Board of Legislators in this regard enlightening us over and over and over again on the same material, but I thank you for that. I think number one, something that came to light, something we seriously have to consider, and I've put this in writing, I've sent it to the legislators, I've sent it to chairmen of different boards, is, and you mentioned it, the procurement policy. I think to say that the policy in itself is loose is an understatement. And it's funny that you mentioned the architect, it's not funny, but the architect, landscapes, and the surveyors as being exempt other than the pre-qualifications.
But then, if you look at those rules, they have RFP processes, and it actually
correct.
Is a very, because, and I have to give credit to the late legislator Kay Karski,
mm-hmm.
because the last amendment to that, I was the lawyer on that one.
Nice.
Pride in that one. But I worked with former legislator Karski and the Public Works Committee and eventually the B&A Committee on amending that because mm-hmm. she wanted a much stronger RFP process mm-hmm. when you were going over $100,000. There's a lesser process for contracts for architects, engineers, and land surveyors between 20 and 100.
Right.
Then you have to do a real formal RFP process.
Yeah, I just let the legislator.
No, and that's fine. I can appreciate that. I just think there's something like 21 exemptions in the policy in itself. And when you compare
the procurement policy
yes.
as opposed to pre-qualification
yes.
selection, yeah, because they don't have
exactly.
Right.
So I mean, when you take, and not that we should do this on every occasion, but I think it's interesting to do when you take our procurement policy and you compare it to say Rockland County or Putnam
right.
County or Nassau County, you're going to find vast differences. Ours being. It has the most exemptions out of all of them. Some of them have only one exemption, I believe.
Well, if you look at the beginning, a lot of them are, you know, for legal reasons,
mm-hmm.
Like the federal one, obviously, if I get federal money, I've
right.
got to follow their rules.
Right.
And some of them are just recitations of state law. And mm-hmm. the only reason we put those in there was to make it clear to a lot of the departmental contract managers
mm-hmm.
is if it falls under these rules, don't even look at the procurement policy.
Right, because
another
set
applies. Right, there's another set of rules that apply. So that's why a lot of them are like that in the beginning.
Okay. With regard to the short form contract, because it's something that I have brought to, I guess, people's attention, I don't know. I'm just not happy at this point in time that while we are giving attention to many of the short form contracts that, for example, are listed here, one concern of mine has been that not all of the short form contracts are listed to the website, or do we have access to, or on that short form report, and You testified to that.
And that goes to terms and conditions.
Correct.
Which,
terms and
I
conditions.
Didn't get to in my presentation
yes.
today.
Right.
But the terms and conditions contracts go back to 1992,
yes.
and it was a decision at the behest of former Deputy County Executive Neil DeLuca. He wanted to be
mm-hmm.
faster and shorter, short
right.
form. And there was a policy where by former County Attorney Marilyn Slatton, which has been continued to the
yes.
present day, where for contracts of under 5,000 or 5,000 or less, term of a year or less,
mm-hmm.
With several other provisos, that we have a pre-approved form.
Right.
So those contracts don't get approved by my office. They're pre-approved.
Yes, I'm aware.
And so when I prepare that list, I'm very careful to say these are the short form contracts that have been signed off on by my
mm-hmm.
office. If you want a list of terms and conditions, you have to contact the finance department.
Yes, I'm aware. Thank you. I guess one of my concerns is, and you know, it's a contract that's in here. No one pointed it out today, and I guess that's okay. There are contracts that are being signed off on, and again, I've been an advocate of some of these, I believe, should be coming before the Budget and Appropriations Committee. More than one, several, quite
mm-hmm.
frankly. I do believe that we should have the ability to review them, to vote on them, to discuss the validity of them, if you will. And I'm putting this on the record again.
Of all short-term form contracts?
No, not all. I do believe that we should have the ability as a board to review them. I understand that the chairman has certain powers, and I respect
no,
that.
No, I just want to get clarity so that I can understand.
Sure.
When you said them, what's specifically you're referring to?
Them in the term of contracts, them?
Yeah. You mean all contracts, some contracts?
I guess let me put it this way then. What method or tool do any of us at this table have? If we have serious questions about a contract, how would we go about questioning them, discussing them, possibly voting on them. And I guess what I'm getting at is the answer is zero. Like, you know, close your eyes, what do you say? Nothing. Well, because there's no tool for us to use that regard.
You would, to vote on them, you'd have to change the
form. I think
short forms are delegated to AEC, so you have absolutely no authority to vote on them.
So the delegation from the county executive to certain department heads and boards, that's
which is done by authorization of the Board of AEC. Yeah.
Okay, and then mandated, therefore, set about in a charter, if you will.
Because it's done pursuant to the charter.
Correct. Okay. I have several contracts, and again, while I'm delighted we're looking at all of these contracts, I think we're losing focus on what is important in some of the contracts that are slipping by all of us and no one's saying anything about them. I will point out one, and it is, I think it's on page 3. It's a contract, and it relates to my district, which is why I focused in on it. I'm not going to tell you about it. It's a contract to Cheryl Brannon for $20,000. She had the contract last year. It appeared again this year on our short form contract list of April 5th, I believe. I have it in front of me.
Was that 20 or 10?
It's on the list you have in front of you.
I'm looking at it here.
2010, yes. And then it went out again this year, and it was approved, I believe, on April 5th. Another $20,000 to the same female. You know, just sort of delving into what this person does.
Well, this is a Board of Legislative contract.
Yes, correct. You know, this is a contract that deals with going out into various schools and speaking with students to promote, I suppose, the medical field and the advantages of pursuing that career, if you choose to do so. I took it upon myself to meet with several doctors in my district who have basically offered to do this for free. So, you know, it's something like this. It's $20,000, and I'm just saying, why and when, and don't we look at them?
Well, I think that in terms of what this committee, we're going to get a chance to look at everything. I mean, that's why we are going through this process. But it will not be just one contract versus another. It'll be all of the contracts, all those that are done by us and those that are done by the county executive, by the administration.
And I'm
all.
Not excluding the CE's office exactly. I am not.
So that's fair. That's a fair assessment that every should be judged by the same standards, and that's what we're going to have that's what we're beginning now.
Well, okay, then I guess in the spirit of moving this along, I would urge haste to this committee and to the legislation committee. I think we are neglecting to do our job in many regards by not doing it expeditiously. I mean, it's legislation.
Yeah, can I just make a point here?
Absolutely.
Because I think there's, and with all due respect, I think there's some mixing of apples and oranges. When you're looking at specific contracts and the reasons they were given out,
yes,
that's different. I mean, you have investigatory powers under the charter to do that. So if it's a department head, you can ask them about their contract.
Right.
That doesn't require changing the law.
Okay.
If you're asking about
it,
you have the other issue about approving, that would require a charter change.
Correct. And therein lies the difference, because we don't even find out about them until after they've been approved. So therefore, we don't really have the ability to investigate to that end.
When
do
we get the charter?
That is correct. No.
Right.
Under the charter.
And I think that is unfortunate. And I think that this board has a fiscal responsibility to watch every dime. And no, I'm not talking about, you know, we called an electrician to fix an outlet that was broken. And so, you know, I'm talking about other things, a bigger picture here. And again, not excluding the CE's office. I am not.
No,
there are contracts that are going out the door that no one is paying attention to, and they're going out year after year. And I seriously have to ask, in this particular case, is this something, $20,000 of the taxpayers' money, could we have gotten the same service for free?
Well, we can ask that we've got $5 million of taxpayers, $5.5 million of taxpayers' money on this list that I'm looking at here. Mm-hmm. And I agree that we need to look at, in terms of, I agree with Mr. Robertson, in terms of the merits of the contract, that's a different question than the process by which the contract has been.
I can only address the legal
I'm trying to, for this beginning meeting, we were looking at trying to get a sense of what the process is.
That's why I tried to prepare this overview for you.
We will get to, I mean, the merits of the contract actually obviously is going to be, that's what legislatures do, in that they make legislative choices and they vote, and the votes, they vote on what they believe is best public policy, and that's part of what they elected to do. So the merits of the contract itself will be determined in the legislative process. The process of how the contracts are let and whether or not they are let in a legally permissible manner is what we will be looking at. When the time comes to decide, well, someone propose a contract, we have individual legislators have a choice. We vote yes or no against it. Once we vote yes or no, if it fails, then it fails. If it passes, it becomes part of the law. Once it passes, then the process by which it is enforced is what we're talking about. How do you now let that contract, basically? I mean, that's what we are. Am I confused? Okay.
There are many different levels to that.
And I disagree with that analysis, Chair, okay. With all due respect, because, again, we don't get to vote on those contracts. And I keep going back to this one contract, and then I love recycling and every effort being made thereof.
Well, this particular contract, just to clarify the point.
Fine.
In other words, you would want to vote. I mean, if you had your way, you would want to vote on this particular contract that you just identified.
That would be one of many, I believe, the legislators should have eyes on.
To vote on.
To discuss, at least to discuss. And if it doesn't come to a vote or it gets voted down, I can buy into that. But at least I think as legislators,
to vote on.
To discuss.
Okay. I mean, we can.
For example.
All right. I mean, that's.
Yeah. Recently, you know, a short form contract went out for over $4,000 for recycling bins to a library.
Right.
I'm not certain 17 legislators would have approved that had it come to the table, had we discussed it. I don't know as if that would have passed, because quite frankly, I think that is an abusive waste of time.
But I think, but I mean,
but it's going to the point of a broader.
So the committee does not get our committee.
Those are all board of legislators, right?
Yeah. So I mean,
right.
So that we can probably
real general.
Let me just summarize and finish it up here. Yeah. And yes, you are 100% correct. And I tried to hit upon that point when I first began speaking, because again, I'm delighted that we're here talking about short form contracts submitted by Ken Jenkins. However, I submitted similar legislation that requested different things that really has not received much attention. So I guess what I'm saying is, while we're talking about this, I do believe we should be looking at my legislation conversation.
It has not been referred to this committee legislation.
Right, and it's going nowhere in that committee. Again, and I'll put this on the table again, I do believe some committee, and I've written it, I've requested it, should take a closer look at the procurement policy.
If I can just for the record,
yes.
The legislation committee is already doing that. By law, your honorable board is required by law.
Yeah, exactly. That's
policy. So they are in the process of doing that right now.
And I'll bet if they haven't done it in many years.
Very
correct.
True. And
I'm glad they've started the
process. We put out, on behalf of the committee, a poll to gain, so we have actual data for the committee to work with.
From the department, I'm aware.
Well, actually from this honorable board, too, and we've got about half back, and
I didn't receive a question there.
All right.
Legislative
Market, are you finished with your comments or questions?
All right, may I get a copy of that through the chair? May I get a copy of that poll that was submitted to you?
Which?
That was out of Chairman Donna's committee.
Well, not this committee.
This committee.
It's the legislation committee.
Yeah. Okay, so then I would have to request that of Chairman Donna.
It went to Chairman Donna.
Okay.
It went to all the procuring officers, so it...
Could we get back to, let me ask that we get back to this committee so that we're not talking about the legislation committee in this committee. Whatever needs to be taken up with the legislation committee, I suggest we take that up. Legislative Market, are you finished?
I am.
Okay, Legislative Shimsky.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I just want to make one comment, and then I have another series of clarifying questions for you. First of all, I just want to say that at this point, I am looking at this on a completely neutral basis. I'm looking at this 15-page list, and I have certain questions or certain observations that I could make on any of these.
Right.
And I don't mean to suggest that I find any particular contract particularly problematic or not particularly problematic. In fact, the reason why I picked on American Aquatic is because on the four corners of the document, it looked as if there is a justifiable reason for splitting up the contracts, even if I didn't know the precise nature of what that justification was. There is enough information on here. I have been, to the extent I've picked on any particular companies or individuals, I've done it with the purpose of trying to tease out information so I understand how this thing works. Because once I understand how this thing works, I can then go back and I'll have more intelligent questions about specific things. My question to you is, I just want to understand what is shortened in a short form contract.
You don't go to ANC, that's all.
Okay.
You don't go to ANC. That's it.
And the contract doesn't go to ANC.
The contract doesn't go to ANC. It doesn't need further approval of the Board of ANC. Mm-hmm.
But ANC, if I read the second paragraph of your explanation correctly, ANC does approve something called a certificate of authorization.
Well, there's a resolution that's adopted for some. There's actually two resolutions that are adopted, usually at the beginning of the term of a new county executive.
Okay.
And they were at the beginning of this term of the current county executive. One is the resolution for department heads, for the heads of boards, departments, commissions, to sign contracts that are approved by ANC. Without that, otherwise the county executive has to sign everything. And then the second one is what's, for reasons I don't know, it was the nickname before I got here, they started calling short-form contracts. And that is a delegation to the head of a department for contracts for the benefit of that particular contract, for that particular department, to go out and sign contracts without further authorization of ANC. And there are specific conditions put in that certificate of authorization. But the law doesn't set those limitations. It's the county executive who sets those limitations. And it's also the Board of ANC through that resolution.
So, essentially, every 4 years, at least, a new county executive comes in, sets the policy as to what has to go through ANC and what does not have to go through ANC.
And I have to say, the 20,000 in 1 year, which is the general one, that mm-hmm. hasn't changed since the O'Rourke administration.
Okay.
Even with inflation, that's yep. the same.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, but I agree that if we're going to look at this, we're going to look at the entire policy, including all of those assignment of all, because it's $75 million the last time I saw of contracts, what's called contractual services within the county budget. And sometimes we end up talking about, and you know, maybe we talk about the little ones, but I think we've got to look at the entire, if we're going to look at this, we're going to look at the entire universe. And the universe will be judged by the same standard, whether it's $10 or $10 million. That's the way that I would
approach it. But it's important to understand, because you're talking about the budget function. The Board of Legislators does not approve contracts during the budget.
Understood.
It's illegal, because you haven't done a procurement.
Right.
So you put money in a budget for some a department or
right.
a board or commission to later. So they have to come in, and they'll come to your committees, and they'll give you an overview of what kind of contractual services they want.
Right.
But right now, unless you eliminate the Board of ANC, this honorable board doesn't approve contracts.
Well, that's one of
with certain exceptions, part of leases and purchases of property because of the charter requires.
Right. But part of the entire, I think that there are other committees who are looking at that, but I think that this whole discussion of contracts go into exactly that entire governance and how that works, because I think that it clearly runs kind of up against I think some of the issues that Legislator Marcotte is making, that we should be looking at all of these contracts. And when she said all, I use all in parentheses, whether ANC
Absolutely.
Has jurisdiction or not. And so it brings the whole everything into play. That's what the way I see it, in that we will not go. It makes absolutely no sense, in my opinion, to just take a few contracts and just pick those out and say, well, we're going to look at those, and then leave the rest of the universe untouched. If we're going to look at this, we're going to look from top to bottom. And that would be the way that I would propose.
And I would suggest yeah. that as long as we're looking at procedures and how they're followed and what
right.
impact they have, There are two sides to the same coin. There may be a contract for a particular service that some people may find frivolous or something that government should not do. But on the other hand, there are also questions about using the ANC process to slow up contracts for services that are considered meritorious by prevailing numbers
by the
right.
legislative body.
Right. And using the ANC process to try to hold them up or avoid spending the money. that's also a problem. And I think if we want to study the whole procedure, we should study the whole procedure.
I would just caution on that one. To the extent the board wants an opinion on that.
No.
No,
we're not asking for an opinion.
No, it's okay.
You don't need to say anything. You know,
I would not be free to offer that right
now. No.
Okay. No, we're not asking
you.
We would not put you in that.
Talking among ourselves. You're okay.
Let me ask you one other question. Maybe you can get back to us on this.
Okay.
But I'd like if you can send us a response as to what safeguards the county attorney's office employs to ensure departmental compliance. In other words, what safeguards?
With compliance with what?
With the procurement policy. What safeguards do you employ? Oh, if you do, I don't know if that's your function. It might not be your function.
Right now, it's not my function.
It's not your function.
It's the individual department procuring officer.
So you're saying
that is set forth in the law. We review them for legal sufficiency when we look at them.
Right. Okay.
And that I tried to make very clear in our presentation. This is where you have to understand how the system works. In your own department, you have a procuring officer. He's the chairman of the board. He's the named one per statute of the Board of Legislators.
Right.
It usually gets deferred to someone else in the department, or delegated to someone else in the department. If you read through my whole presentation, I said the most important part of the procurement policy is Section 11. It requires you to keep a file. That's where the evidence will be that you comply with the procurement policy.
Yes. But I think
the only way I, as a lawyer, can determine that you did so is to go and look at your file.
Right. So, in other words, I'm glad that you responded to that question because
I don't have access to it.
That was a concern. I mean, and that comes along with the same question that the legislator raised about, well, how do we know that this is the best use of the money? Well, if we start looking at having safeguards, we will make sure that, first of all, that the contract is in compliance with what the intent is. And you're saying it's not your department, and that's one of the things that we want to look at here to see whether we need to have a safeguard in place for all, not just a few, all contracts, whether it comes through the Board of Legislators or the administration.
And what I was suggesting before, when you're doing a procurement policy, that you read the very beginning, and I've testified to this in Chairman Nona's committee when we're reviewing the procurement policy. Introduction to Section 104B is what should guide your decisions, because the reason for having a procurement policy is set forth by the state legislature, and it is so as to ensure the prudent and economical use of public monies in the best interests of taxpayers, political subdivision, or district, facilitate the acquisition of goods or services or maximum quality at the lowest possible cost under the circumstances, and to guard against favoritism, improvidence, extravagance, fraud, and corruption. Those are the same words you find in the public bidding laws.
Right.
So that's what you as a legislature are supposed to do when you're adopting policies. You're supposed to make sure we're getting the best price and avoiding favoritism, improvidence, extravagance, fraud, and corruption.
And I suggest to you that the maximums and minimums were set precisely for those reasons. So that's the end of any other questions?
You've answered a question.
You answered it at the end. Any other questions or comments? Let me thank you. Thank the County Attorney's Office. Thank you, Mr. Robinson.
And you're going to be sending list of
I will go through the list and kind of hone it down and. And if you can, you'll send us up.
The planning one I know about now, so we can start on that. But until you send me the list,
And we'll have you back because this
it does take time. So from the time you get it, we have to go in and examine in great detail.
Okay.
And I will be off the week of the 29th.
So you'll be off the week of the 29th.
29th.
When the week after the week of the 29th, you'll be back.
Yes, but the point I was making was I need to have the request to.
Let's get the request to you, and then we'll set a meeting so that you can come back with the responses. Mm-hmm. How about that?
That would suit me.
Okay. Do we have minutes to approve?
Yes.
Yeah, I have minutes. Motion to approve the minutes.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes approved. Any other matters on this?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, I would. I'm looking to see on the agenda. You said you submitted legislation to...
Well, I submitted it on the floor June 20th, and it was referred to this committee.
It was?
Yes, it was. I have a copy if you'd like, and I would ask that it be received and filed and possibly reviewed in the near future.
It was referred to this committee? Legislation committee, probably.
And government reform and efficiency.
It was.
I'll double check, but 99%.
If it was referred to the committee, I will receive and file it. No doubt about it. If it's not, then could you make sure that it is referred for our next meeting?
Yes.
Okay.
So I will
double check. I'm
yeah.
If it is, it'll be
received and filed.
Okay, got it. Thank you.
Okay. Motion to adjourn.
So moved.
We are adjourned. Let's take NCR.